We are with part two of the Kerr Methods Modular Symmetry, and I would like to take up a question that I got in the break. The question was, if we have a big set and we take the set of all permutations of that set, how do we check the group axioms? Because it's gigantic, we cannot do all the little calculations by hand, right? So how do we abstractly check the group axioms if we have any set and the set of permutations and composition of maps for the binary operations? So I just want to go through this quickly, just orally. I will not write it all down, but then it's on the audio and you can check for yourself later and maybe do one or two more examples. How does it work? So we have G1. We need a set with a binary operation. And for the binary operation, we need that if we compose two of these maps, then again, the composition is an element of the same set, meaning it's a permutation, which means it's a bijective map from the set to itself. So abstractly, if I have a set, let's call it M, and I have two bijective maps, let's call them alpha and beta, from the set to itself, then the composition will also be a bijective map from the set to itself. And if you want to see proof, give me homework and we discuss it tomorrow. That's good. We have another day, so you can give me homework. Okay? That's G1. G2, associative law for maps, and I think I said it several times already, I will say it once more. If you have bijective maps, alpha, beta, and gamma, from a set M to itself, then the composition of these three doesn't need brackets. The associativity law holds. It doesn't matter which way around you put the brackets. And again, I'm happy to prove this to you. It can be homework, and we do it tomorrow. That's fine. Or later, when we are all tired, then I can do it. Okay, that's G2. G3, the neutral element, that's of course the identity map. If we do nothing, then that's always a good candidate for a neutral element. And inverse maps exist because of the bijectivity. That's one way to define a bijective map, that there is an inverse map. And the inverse map goes again from the same set into itself, so it's the natural candidate for the inverse element in the group. Something else I would like to say, because it came up in the same question and I found it important, so let me repeat it for everyone. What the neutral element is depends not only on the set, but also on the binary operation. And therefore, inverses also have to be seen in context. Let's take the real numbers, for example. The real numbers have at least two very natural binary operations that we can use on them, namely plus and times. If I ask for inverses, then I have to distinguish which one I mean. Because if I give you the number 5 and I ask you for an inverse, maybe some of you will say -5 and maybe some of you will say 1/5, depending on what binary operation you were thinking of. Okay? So the context is important, and very often I will start with a set and a binary operation and then the context is clear. And if it's not, then we should always discuss what is the context. Anything else that came up during the break? Any question, any confusion, anything? Yeah.
Will a null set be considered a group?
Say it again, please.
Will a null set, a zero set, will it be considered a group, an empty set?
If it's a set with just zero in it, yes.
Set.
The empty set, no. The empty set cannot be a group. Why?
It's empty.
So which one of the axioms is violated? It doesn't say it in the definition. G is a set. It doesn't say G is a non-empty set. But there is a place where non-emptiness is necessary. Maybe you can spot it. Where is it?
Associative. Maybe at least.
I can say things about the empty set. They will always be true. G1 and G2 are not a problem because I can just make these statements about the empty set. On nothing, that's fine.
G3,
what is the problem in G3?
There's no neutral element.
Exactly, it says there exists an element that is neutral, so it must exist. That's the only place where we actually claim that something must exist in the set. Everything else works on the empty set, this one doesn't. So groups are never the empty set, there always has to be something. And sometimes that's all there is. And in mathematics, we like extreme and weird cases, which is why we sometimes spend time with the empty set or with a group that contains just one element. The set with only the number 0, and addition. That's a group. Very boring, but it's a group. And it's important. We need the boring groups as well. Why shouldn't they? And we can take multiplication as well. So here we can take two different binary operations. And it seems a bit weird, but I can define 0 times 0 is 0. So 0 is the neutral element, and it's inverse to itself. And it sounds really weird, but why not? So the set only with 0 is a group with binary operations plus and times multiplication. We can take the set that consists only of 1 with multiplication, and again, that's a group, a very boring group. Mm-hmm. What else do we have on my little list? The set that consists of 1 and minus 1 with multiplication, and it's the multiplication from the integers. What do you think about this example? Does it work? Does it not? Just check and just keep talking to me what you see. Why is G1 not working?
Because if we consider that binary operation as positive, then it will give us 0.
It's multiplication.
It's a dot, it's multiplication.
Oh, yeah.
We just need to check what happens if we multiply the numbers in the set. So it's 1 times 1, or 1 times minus 1, or the other way around, or minus 1 times itself. And we just need to check whether we leave the set. Do we leave the set with multiplication? No, we don't. So G1 is actually okay. What about the associativity law? It's fine, because we have it for all integers in multiplication, again, from school. So if we believe that we can calculate with the integers the way we do, then that's fine. What about G3? Do you have a candidate for a neutral element? Which one could it be?
One.
Yeah, works. Mm-hmm. What about inverses? It's tiny. We can just check by looking at the elements. What do you think? Does it work?
Yes.
What's the inverse of 1? What's the inverse of minus 1? Oops, okay, so everything is inverse to itself. Yeah, that can happen. So I'm trying to give you lots of different examples of what can happen with the elements and the inverses and so on. So this again is a boring example. It's very small, but again, it's very important. And now matrices over the integers with addition. Right, it doesn't specify the size. So let's just take 2 by 2, and then everything will generalize from there, hopefully. So what does this look like? Close. So my notation for this is M for matrices, 2 by 2 for the size, and Z for the domain where the entries come from. So this is just what I use in my linear algebra, and we use it for now. So it's the set of matrices A, B, C, D, where the entries are integers. And my binary operation should be plus. What do you think? What works, what doesn't maybe? What is your intuition? Should this be a group? Matrices and addition, if we have the same size and the same domain where things come from? You seem optimistic? Okay, let's check. If I take two such matrices and I add them, do I get another matrix on the same domain? Yeah, we have to check a little bit. The size stays the same. For the entries, we just need to remember the rules for matrix addition, and then we see that we just add up integers. So once we know that adding up integers doesn't leave the set of integers, then we're fine. Okay, so G1 is okay. What about G2? Associativity for matrix addition. Have you ever proved this?
This is not multiplication. For addition,
it's not multiplication, it's addition.
Yeah, so for addition, it's
exactly. For multiplication, we would maybe have to think twice. But again, it's associativity, it's not commutativity. It's associativity, and if you have never seen the proof, do it. It's fine. Everything boils down to calculating with integers. Right. What about G3? Do you have a candidate for a neutral element? Is there a matrix that behaves neutrally? Yeah. You seem to have an idea? Still thinking? You seem to have an idea too?
The zero matrix.
The zero matrix. Yeah. Okay. Let's just double check it's in there, because sometimes when we have an idea for a neutral element, then we go, oops, it's not even in the set. But it is, because zero is an integer, and so we're allowed to put it everywhere. Okay, good. What about inverses? What is the inverse of such a matrix A, B, C, D? Do we find one? What do you think? Again, you seem optimistic. You seem doubtful. Huh. Can you tell me the inverse?
This is, if you just minus A, minus B, minus C.
Ah. Aha. Again, we are using knowledge from the integers. So, in order to get this A away to zero, we need to subtract A, which means it should be minus A, and then it works. And given A from the integers, minus A is also an integer, so we're allowed to put it there in the matrix, and we are in the right domain, and everything is fine. So this works very generally. Basically, every time you have such a nice set with such a nice binary operation, you can build bigger structures from it, and very often the group properties that you had will carry over. Very often, not always, but very often you can use a principle like this one in order to construct a new, bigger group that gives you more possibilities. So here we have matrices. We could also have used tuples like this, x, y, where x, y are z, so this set, together with addition, where addition is for the components. Similar idea than for matrices. Again, gives you a nice group. In this way, you can construct examples. Okay, and we have to be careful, because this is addition. Addition is easy. Multiplication is more interesting. We can go into that later. Actually, we could briefly go into this now. If we take addition here, then everything works like with matrices, and we get a group. What do you think happens with multiplication? So if we take this set, and we define a multiplication, and I call it circle. I like funny names for my binary operations. I apologize now, and I hope it's okay. So if I define that AB circle CD is defined to be the tuple I get if I take the entries in the components and I multiply them, this looks like a really nice binary operation, because if I take this with integers, then these products will be integers, so I end up in the same set, and it looks really beautiful. Do I get a group? Maybe I should give you this as homework, or as an additional exercise, because it's nice. It looks nice, everything goes down to multiplication. The binary operation, the associativity law looks fine. So maybe it's just a matter of doing some calculations to find a good neutral element. Maybe that's not obvious. Take some time. I'll give you this as a little extra exercise. So we can move on. And we could...
Then here you would mean inverses, like inverse of a matrix.
What an inverse is depends on what the neutral element is in the context. So first you have to find a way to find out whether there is a neutral element and what it is, and then you understand what an inverse is. There is no way to define an abstract inverse before you know what's going on with the binary operation. So this is what I was trying to tell you earlier with this comment, that if you have the reals and you talk about inverses, it's not clear whether you mean addition or multiplication. You have to specify. And if you have an abstractly given binary operation where you have no idea and no intuition, maybe, to start with, at least I would have to think about it, then you can't have an intuition about the inverse, maybe, at first. So you have to really abstractly go by the definition, what does it say in G4, what needs to be satisfied, what could be the neutral element. It's like a puzzle. And the puzzle mindset is a good one in this case, because a puzzle mindset can mean that we pretend to know nothing, which is good. Very often in maths, I get further if I pretend that I do nothing rather than thinking I already know everything, because then I make more mistakes. Let's very quickly check out the first few exercises and see whether you feel confident working on them before we move on. In the exercises, we have this exercise number one that is very plainly called, is it a group or not? And there is some stuff that we have seen in a similar way already, and then there are also lots of things that we have not discussed. In particular, there are some words, continuous maps, for example, but given your background, I'm sure you're comfortable with that. Anything in these exercises that you need to discuss now? And I don't mean, do you know all the answers? I mean, do you understand the question? And I think the only word we have not discussed here is continuous, which should be fine for physicists. Right? Because now, I think, oh, and there you go. The construction in two is what we have started discussing, and it's a matter for you to now really go through all the details and really make sure everything is working. And then the same construction with multiplication is that it's already there. I forgot that I had added this last line, but it's matching exactly what we have discussed just now. So you should be all set up for the first two exercises, and now we move on, and after we have moved on a little bit, you will also be set up for the third.
What is the meaning of this notation semicolon and equal to?
Say it again, please.
What is the meaning of this notation semicolon and equal to?
Oh, colon equality.
Yeah.
Colon equality means is defined to be. So the way I used it here, for example, thank you for asking. When I write this, AB circle CD is defined to be the tuple A times C, B times C, then I mean that this is a definition, this is a setting that I take, this notation from now on means that, until the exercise or the example is finished, and then maybe it means something else.
Okay.
Another mathematician's thing. Yeah, thank you for asking. Right. Then we can go back to the little manuscript and start proving things, because this is something we have only begun to do a little bit, but it is my day-to-day thing. This is what I do. Work as a mathematician means understanding concepts and definitions, finding examples, and proving things. And given that this little workshop today and tomorrow is supposed to give you a glimpse of what mathematical work is like, I think we should definitely practice proving things. Ready? Let's look at the little result. This time we have a group, and we don't know what the set G is, and we don't know what the binary operation is. We have no idea. We only know it's a group, so we can work with the axioms. And there are four little statements that we are supposed to prove now. The first statement is that if I take group element A, then its inverse A star, the way it was defined, times A is the neutral element. And maybe you notice that the ordering is reversed. So in the definition, we said A times A star is E, and here we claim that the other way around, we get E as well. In other words, if we combine an element and an inverse, then the ordering doesn't matter. We don't know, we prove it. Then in B, it's the same for the neutral element. In our group axioms, we say that if we combine with a neutral element, and if the neutral element comes from the right, then nothing changes. And here we claim that from the left, it also doesn't change anything. So again, it's a little variation of what we said in the axioms, and we already had the comment earlier that this follows immediately from the group axioms. We will see now how it follows. But then we prove a little bit more, because in part C, we say that A star, so once we find an inverse element and we call it A star, it will be the only inverse element for A. It's uniquely determined. You can't find several different inverse elements for anything. And the same for the neutral element. Once you found one, It's the only one. There are not several possibilities, and that's great. And it follows from the axioms. You don't need to claim it. It follows from the axioms that once you have a group, ordering doesn't matter with inverses and with a neutral element. That's great. And they're uniquely determined. So that's, again, great. And just the fact that so many things in groups are uniquely determined gives us powerful tools. You wouldn't believe what happens when you start developing this theory. You have these four little axioms, it's almost nothing, and oh, how far we can go with that. Let's start. My hand turns. Yes, I just flip it very carefully. I don't want to break anything. Ta-da! And we prove something. Whoops. That was only a magnet. When was the last time you've done a proof? Oh, people are laughing. Oh, that's such a nice reaction. Okay, I just take the laughing. That's fine. We begin, of course, with A, and we use all the notation that is there. What do we have to do? We have to prove that A star times A is E, and the only thing we know is that these elements come from a group and that we have the axioms G1 to G4. In particular, A star is an element in the group that is there, so I can treat it as an ordinary group element, and everything that holds for group elements holds for little a star. In particular, G4 applied to a star tells me that there is an inverse. I could call it a star star, but maybe that's a bit confusing. So instead, I will just give it another letter. Using G4, let G and G be such that, this is my abbreviation for such that, A star times G is E is the neutral element. And such an element G exists, it's basically A star star. I'm just not using that notation because it might be confusing. Now we do a little calculation. Let me begin with the thing on the left-hand side, A star times A. And now, I do not change it by multiplying it with the neutral element, right? Because G3 says multiplying with the neutral element doesn't change anything. So now I can write A star times A times E. And this is G3 I was using here. I would like to use more exciting colors. Is it okay if I use more exciting colors?
Yes.
Let's use them all, because we can. Okay, that's some violet kind of thing. So this is G3. Now I replace E by A star times G. I can, because they are the same element. Mm-hmm. Now I would like to change all these brackets. Can I change all these brackets?
Associativity.
Yes. So I'm doing it all at once, right? Because you immediately saw how it goes, so I don't have to change each bracket individually, I just change all of them. Right. And this would be G2 is associativity. So now I change all the brackets and I just write A star times, in brackets, A times A star times G. What do you see? In the middle, A times A star. Any idea what we can do there? Ah, what is A times A star? It's E, from the definition, from the axioms. I can replace this by E. And I omit brackets because of the associativity law. Because E doesn't do anything, I can just leave it out. Oh, sorry, I did not use G3 here, I used G4. A times A star is E. And then I use G3 afterwards in order to just leave it out. Let's be very correct here. A star times G, it says up there, is E. And now we're done, because we started with A star times A, and we ended up with E. And we only used the group axioms. And okay, we were a little bit clever, but basically that's it. Now we do B. And you can expect everything now to be along these lines. Using the axioms, maybe having one or two clever little steps, but that's it. Because we know nothing, we only have a group, we have no idea what's going on, so of course we cannot use any clever arguments. We can only use the axioms right now. We have E times A, and we're supposed to show that this is A. And again, I will start in a very similar way, just taking the left hand side. I think I want to replace E by something. I know I have the group element A because we took it, and now I can combine A with its inverse, A star. And using part A, it doesn't matter which way around I combine them, I always get E. Now, the way around that I think would be nice and gets us further is to write first A and then A star, because then I can group A star and A together when I change the brackets. This means that I'm using G4 and A by replacing E by A times A star. No, maybe it's only G4 now, and E comes later. Only G4. I don't want to do two steps at once. Now again, brackets. I change, and I get A times A star times A, and now I want to use A because now this is E and this is A from the original axiom where E is on the right hand side. That was G3. And again, we're done. And now we can move to C and D. The quality changes now a little bit. So now we just proved equations and we played with the axioms. Now the quality changes a tiny bit because in statement C and D, we proved that something is the unique element with a given property. I don't know whether you're familiar with this, but often I see this in other areas of mathematics, not just in algebra. We do it too, but in analysis or geometry or something, we often have arguments like existence and uniqueness. So maybe you're familiar with this from the beginning of your undergrad when maybe you did this in maths courses, I don't know. It would be something like the existence of a map and the uniqueness, or maybe the existence of a matrix with certain properties and the uniqueness of it, or something like this. The existence of an inverse element and of a neutral element is given by the axioms, but there is no talk of uniqueness. from what we know now, there could be lots of neutral elements and lots of inverses for everything. Why not? Would be a bit chaotic, but nothing wrong with it. C and D now change the situation. And the way that at least I very often go about uniqueness proofs in a kind of standard way. So I have a thing with a property. I want to prove it's the only thing with that property, which means that I go and I take something with the property and I show that this something I took is the original thing I already knew. That's a standard procedure and that's going how we're going to work here. Which means that for part C, I will take something that is called C that behaves like a star. So it has the same inverse property and then I will prove that this element is actually a star. Let C and the group G be such that A times C is E, which means that C behaves like a star, and we prove it is a star. Then, so we expect another calculation along the same lines. Sorry, I'm getting warm now and I need to drink now. Please make sure that you stay hydrated as well. Our brains are working hard, they need the water. How can we get our hands on C? Let's use the neutral element. So C is the same as C times E. And now, yes. Now let's write E as A times C, which means that we get C times A times C. Here I just use the neutral element as I just do, 2, 3, and here I use this equation. And now I want to do a little trick. C behaves like a star. If it does, then it should satisfy everything that a star satisfied, which means that we can use statement A for C instead of a star. Which means that for A and C, it doesn't matter which way around I multiply them, the result is always E. With this little trick, so I combine this statement with A, I can replace this C times A here by, sorry, what did I want to do? By E. That's not what I want to do. I think I want to write E as A times A star rather than A times C. Yes. So I think I see a shortcut. I had another idea, but I think I see the shortcut. I want to do this at a later moment. I keep the color. But let me here just take A times A star as in the usual, as we usually use A star. So it's A times A star coming from property G4. It's in the ordering from the axiom, so, and I don't put brackets on because of the associativity law. Now I have just replaced E by A times A star. Now I want to do what I wanted to tell you about before. I want to apply this together with A, because now I have C times A, and C times A is the same as A times C, because C behaves like a star. The ordering doesn't matter, which means that I can replace this here by E. And now I use property B. B tells me that E is a neutral element not only if I multiply from the right, but also if I multiply from the left, which is what happens here. So this is A star. And we proved that C, the arbitrary element that we took that behaves like A star, actually must be A star. I need to add something here. So this is B. And the statement we were going for is C is equal to A star. Now let me go through this argument again briefly, just because I had a little detour here. We start with C, and we can write C as C times E, because E is neutral. Then we replace E by A times A star. So we use the original A and A star from property G4. And then I take C times A, and I look at it, and I see, oh, this is like A times C, but just with reversed order. But I can reverse the order because C behaves like A star. Therefore, I can replace this by E, and then everything else is there, I hope. And we see the little tricks. They're always the same, almost. So for D, we don't expect any surprises. For D, we take an element that behaves like E, like the neutral element. Let F in G be neutral, like in G3. In particular, it means that F behaves neutrally from the right and also from the left, because we can apply everything to F that we have applied to E, in particular statement B. Then B holds for F. And this is important, because then we can do a very, very tiny calculation. Now E is the same as E times F, because F behaves neutrally. If I multiply with anything from the right by F, then it stays the same, because F is neutral. B holds for F and E. Right, so this was G3 applied to F. But now I can use that E behaves neutrally from the left by B. So we said that B holds for F and E, which means that if I do this calculation, then the result should be F. So we're done. That was easy. Okay, ready to do arguments like this yourself? Because there's at least one little exercise where you have to do similar things. Of course, we will practice a bit more. So the next lemma is a two-part lemma where we will prove one part together, and the other part is a little exercise for you, because all the arguments now are very similar. We keep practicing, so you will have all the ideas, I'm sure, after trying a little bit. But before we do that, I would like to go through some notation to make our life easier, so we don't need to always take these elements and the stars and so on. Now we know that things are uniquely determined, let's set up notation that shows it. This is the notation that I have here at the top of the page. The uniquely determined neutral element that we called E so far will now be called 1 index G. And I use the letter 1, or the number 1, because for multiplication it has the association of being neutral, just like the number 1 is neutral for multiplication. So this is supposed to help our intuition. If the binary operation that we use is a dot, like multiplication, then the neutral element will very often be called 1, maybe with an index, in order to help our intuition. Neutral. And the inverses, again for the same reason, will be written with a little minus 1 in the exponent, again to help our intuition, because now this feels like an inverse, like it would be in the real numbers with multiplication. Right, so this is supposed to help us, but we have to be careful, because every time we choose notation that helps our intuition, it might also be dangerous, because our intuition might go wrong. There are always two sides to this, and I'm the kind of person who really likes intuitive notation, but then sometimes I stop myself because I think, no, if I go this far with my notation, then people might get the wrong idea and everything will look too easy, maybe, because they don't think of other examples. Any questions? What what would you like to ask about right now, about these first little results and the rotation that we have? Is there anything that is unclear before we move on? Yes.
Is there, so first you proved that the inverse, the multiplication of inverses are commutative, and then you proved that the multiplication of neutral elements are commutative.
Yes.
Can you reverse the order in the proof?
Maybe. So maybe it's just a different way of organizing it. I have not tried it yet because I find this easy and intuitive. I have to think about whether it can be reversed. Any other questions? No? Let's check the time. If you still have energy, then I would really like to make one more proof and then we talk about the lunch break. Is that okay?
Yeah.
One more proof? So I need to clean something, and before I do, let's discuss what we would like to prove. We have our group, G, with binary operation dot, like multiplication, and the first statement, A, tells us that if we take A, and then the inverse of A, and then the inverse of that, then we get A back. So maybe this is intuitive for you, that if we take the inverse of the inverse, we should get the original element back. But again, maybe our intuition says so. We have to prove that it's actually true, and this will be extremely helpful later on. And then the second statement is, what happens if we first apply the binary operation and then we calculate the inverse? Now, very often in real life when we calculate with numbers and stuff, the ordering doesn't matter, and therefore if we invert, we just invert and then multiply. But in general, this is false if we don't have the commutativity law, which is why we prove what happens instead. If you first multiply and then do the inverse, then if you want to break it down, you have to build the inverses first, but in reverse order, and then multiply. And we are going to do the calculation and check that this is actually true. Of course, in commutative land, it doesn't matter, you can reverse again. But usually we are walking in non-commutative land, and then rules like this one are important. Now take a breather and digest what we have just discussed, and I will clean the board. No, this is not. This cleaner has seen better days. Okay, I will try and find a better solution for tomorrow because these are markers for this board, but the cleaning doesn't work very well. Sorry, I think we have to live with it for today. Otherwise, if it's not readable, please tell me from further away if it's not readable at all, because then we can always move to the flip charts and just do the proofs there. Okay. Given that the arguments that we're using now resemble each other quite a lot, I decided to take one of these bits as an exercise and we prove the other one together. So let's move to B. Right, so for part B, I would like to start with the elements with the notation that we have there, A times B inverse, and just remember what this element means in the group. So what is the meaning of A times B inverse. The notation means that this is an element that if we multiply it with A times B, it should give the identity element, right? Okay, so the definition. Oh, this is not, sorry, but even I can't read it. Stand in front of me. I don't want to work like this. Properly, I have to find out what the problem with the whiteboard is. So for B, A, B in brackets, inverse, is the inverse element for A times B, and we know now that it's uniquely determined by the letter before, right? So this is the uniquely determined inverse element for A times B. This means that if we take A times B and if we find a group element that behaves like an inverse, then it has to be this element here because it's the only one. So this is the trick we're going to play. We're going to prove that the element on the right hand side, B inverse times A inverse, behaves like an inverse element. We calculate. A times B in brackets times B inverse times A inverse. What do we get? So first of all, I would like to use that we can put the brackets anywhere. So this is G2 again. And if I take my brackets anywhere, then I can, for example, say A times brackets, B times B inverse brackets times A inverse. And now you see what happens, right? What happens here in the middle? B times B inverse is the identity element of the group, 1G. And then I can leave this out because it's the identity element. So I'm using G4 and G3. For the next one, when I leave it out, and then I use it again. Again, G4, because now I get the identity element. And now I see that the element B inverse times A inverse behaves like the inverse of A times B. And it's uniquely determined, the inverse, therefore it must coincide with it, so it must be A times B, the minus one. And a similar trick will help you with part A, which is a little exercise. And now, maybe actually I can use the break and solve this board situation. Let's see what I can do. I will stop the audio, take some questions, and then we discuss the rest of the day, okay?